Hello, everyone. I'm Robin Eichert from PeopleSense Consulting, and I'm so pleased to be joined here today with Brandi Hayden from Idaho. And Brandi and I first met several years ago now, and I was immediately taken by her energy, and we had been connected through a mutual colleague who we both respect. And so the conversations that Brandi and I started to have, we had a lot of synergy around the work that we were doing and our philosophy. And so, Brandi, welcome here today.
Thank you so much, Robin.
It's so great to – I always get so excited when I know I'm going to be having a conversation with you because you're just always so real, and I value that so much in an individual. You bring such confidence to – all your interactions, but do it in a very fun and easy way. And so I wanted to share a little bit of what you're doing here. I know you've got some very exciting initiatives that you're putting on the table, you've been working on for quite a while now. I wanted people to learn a little bit more about you and what you're doing. And so thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Just to sort of give people a little bit of background, you know, what was the first thing that you started out doing in business?
I started my young career as a building director and leasing agent for a 10-story historical office building in Los Angeles. And this was an old, old hotel from around the turn of the century, and then became an office building many, many years later. But it was this incredible old building where Johnny Weissmuller and Errol Flynn used to swim in the Olympic-sized swimming pool in the basement of this hotel, and it later became known as the Hollywood Athletic Club and was a hot spot for celebrities to play pool in the Hollywood area. And it was even rumored that Janis Joplin died in this building, and for sure that Charlie Chaplin had the entire penthouse to himself and had several of his lovers up there in the penthouse. So it was a very, very interesting thing to do as a young person in business. And at one point, we had a visitor come in. He and his friend rode in on bicycles and came in, and he said, "I'm doing a little bit of research." And I said, "Gosh, you look kind of familiar." And he said, "Oh, yeah, well, I do some acting." And I said, "Oh, okay." You know, I was so clueless. And so we take him up. There was an old manual elevator in this building, like the old time days. And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I'll take you around all the interesting places in this building." And this is where Chaplin hung out, and up in the penthouse was his. And so he said, "Yeah, that'd be great." So I took him up through the old rickety manual elevator up to the top of this building. And when we stepped out of the elevator, the receptionist for the law firm that was there at the time looked at me and was like, "Oh my God, oh my God, is that Robert Downey Jr.? Is that Robert?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Yeah, yes." I mean, and so he was,
wow.
This is a funny story that I remember later, because at the moment I didn't have a clue, which was probably wonderful for him. And so I paraded him around, yeah, and took him to the roof. And of course he was doing research for his movie Chaplin at the time. So that was my first position in business.
My goodness, a lot of history for that property, but for you too.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of great experience as a building director and leasing agent as a young, young person. Yeah.
So a lot of skills you learn there to transfer later. I can only imagine knowing your work now as I do. So that's very cool. So what are you doing today?
So today I run a nationally known consulting firm called Powerhouse Learning, and we coach with a lot of genuine authenticity to help people grow and develop their business from the inside out. So we work with leadership, sales teams, and service teams on their operational efficiency, on increase in growth, and certainly do a lot of work with leaders on helping them become better leaders.
Music to my ears, as you know.
Yes.
So many things I love about what you do that encourages such good workplace relationships. And you mentioned that you help leaders become better leaders and around the operational efficiencies, all those things so critical. But why does it matter? You know, how does it drive business today in today's economy?
I think what a lot of people are realizing, Robin, is if they don't have a functional, productive workplace, they're not really growing and developing. And I don't mean the people side. I mean, they are not growing their business bottom line the way they should be. And so this isn't just about like psychology 101. This is about what can we do to bring implementation and accountability into the workplace in such a way that we can see it in the bottom line. And that's a really big deal for me. If you know me, I'm very results oriented. And so when I work with an organization, I expect them to be open about the realities of where they're struggling in business so that we can address things at the core.
Yes, and I know that to be true in the clients that I have pointed in your direction. They've been looking at those ways to run their departments or organizations better, and it's an additional area that I'm not as involved with, and I love that because it is critical to the sustainability of an organization today. Look at that operational bottom line and how to fix it, how to grow it, like you said earlier, to expand it. So it's, and you are very results oriented. You really work hard to hold people accountable to what they want to do, which is terrific. So if there was something that you'd want people to know about what you offer, what would you, which sort of, you know, bring it down to three sentences or less, what would that be?
Geez, three sentences or less. Okay. Accountability matters and is easier than you think. Implementation is critical to your success in business. And how you withstand and overcome adversity is your greatest factor for success.
I would love, do you have like a minute to expand on that last one, like how to withstand those challenges?
Sure.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite authors is Paul Stoltz. He said that we face about 22 adversities a day just in our everyday life, right? You get up in the morning, spill coffee on your shirt, and then you have to change your shirt and get going, and then, oh, my gosh, you missed that window of traffic, and now you're stuck in traffic, and off the day goes. And sometimes that happens every day that we face that many adversity. Some of you listening say, geez, I faced 22 adversities before lunch. The reality is that how well we understand how we emotionally connect to adversity makes a big deal on how we implement it in the real world, implement change, I mean, implement our ability to overcome. And so that's one of my favorite works, is it's really helped me a lot look at when difficulties arise, when I'm faced with difficult situations, difficult people, how I see that I have control over my ability to handle that really matters in my life. If I sense that I don't have control, like over myself, my own emotions, my own way to reason through it, then things become more difficult. But if I can say, you know what, I've got control over how I'm feeling about this, what I can do about it, and how I can mitigate the situation with other people, then I have a chance actually becoming better as a leader, but also helping move initiatives forward.
That's so powerful, because we all are going to hit obstacles, right? And having that, reframing that perspective allows us to move through them versus to get stuck, which so many of us do often. So beautiful.
Yeah, it's interesting. I say there's two kinds of people, right? There's those of us when we feel stuck, we do nothing, which is many of us. And then there's some of us that just kind of MSU, right? We become a graduate of MSU. I call that make something up. So so that doesn't mean we lie or we tell a story. It just means we say, okay, I've got to be able to do something, and what is that something? And so anyway, it helps us move forward.
Perfect. All right. So who is your ideal customer that you work with?
I love working with service industry companies and organizations, whether that's the insurance industry, real estate, banks, retail. It doesn't really matter for me. It's all of that same philosophy about being focused on the other, focusing on the customer. It's not just industry. It's also about behavior. So I want people who are open to learning and open to moving things quickly. In other words, maybe they've been unhappy with something for a long time and they're really ready to change. And so when that change opportunity is presented, I want them to really be open to making the changes or making the action steps needed in order to get what they say they want.
And how do you identify if they're open to that learning and change?
Well, we use a survey. We start with a survey for leaders, sales teams, and service teams first, and so that we can really get to the core of what's happening, and that's all included in the beginning conversations that we have. And then I spend 30 days with leaders only before we ever start talking about going inside and working with the organization. And so sometimes we only do 2 on-site visits a year, and that way it's reasonable for the customer and it's easy for us to work through webcam or through telephone calls. But for me, if I can't get my leadership open to making changes, if they can't demonstrate through homework that they're open to making changes, then we're probably not a good fit for the rest, as you know, in your work.
Are the affiliates you work best with?
You know, we get referrals from different kinds of people, whether it's, you know, vendors or peers like you and I, how we trade information because we don't do identically the same thing, and through distributors and wholesalers to those industries, insurance companies, MGAs and MGUs also we work well with. And then I get asked to speak at different conferences. So I had 27 speaking engagements in 2016, and so, you know, things like that where I'm asked to speak at an association event or a local program. And so those are all great for us. We love that.
I bet. I mean, it seems like every time you and I talk, you have been speaking at some national conference or a statewide group, and that must be very fun, too. If you knew then what you know now, what piece of advice would you have for folks?
I think it's to be other-focused. 95% of the time, so much of our headspace is focused around ourselves and what we want and what we're trying to get. And I think it was Zig Ziglar who said, if you help enough other people get what they want, you will always have what you want. So if you're facing disappointment or disillusionment in business, then there's something that needs to shift internally within yourself.
What's the big life lesson or philosophy that you subscribe to today?
I talk a little bit about these weird words that I've learned over the years, and I've morphed them and changed them and made them my own, but they are, what is the experience or emotion you want to create in other people? So what are you committed to create? And that's a big life lesson and philosophy all in one. Of course, I talked about adversity earlier, and the philosophy is that if we can get clear about the experience or emotion we want to create in other people, then we can make things happen in a very different way and in an accelerated way as well.
Is that because it helps you understand how to get there? I mean, what is it about that
yeah.
I think that is key for you?
I think it's the mental rehearsal, Robin. I mean, there's a lot out there, right? It's been going on for many years. In fact, in the 70s, there was a lot of studies done around the Olympics and Olympians and how mental rehearsal helps them trigger those muscles. And Tony Robbins came out and talked a lot about in the early 90s about mental rehearsal. To me, how I can set things up for a win, how I can gear my emotions really has a lot to do with what's going to happen on the outcome. And even though none of us really has a crystal ball, I think that one of the greatest things I've learned is how to, quote, you know, tee up or set up this whole mental rehearsal piece around, you know, what do I want to create? What's the experience I want to have in this situation? And then somehow, and I don't understand it all, but I know that my brain and my body all move in that direction. In other words, my thoughts get more focused, like you said, and then my body, meaning I'm ready to implement, I'm more action-oriented. When I talk to salespeople, I say, if you can get clear about the experience or emotion you want to evoke in the prospect or the buyer, then right in the middle of the sales call, if you're not, quote, getting that kind of emotion or experience, if people aren't moving in your direction, then you actually have the power to course correct right there in the middle of the sales call instead of going back to your car thinking it went really well, or thinking maybe it didn't, but not knowing. So it's just become a really powerful piece in my life.
Absolutely. I like this idea of mental rehearsal, but also having the body and the mind sync up. It's actually one of my experiences with understanding how those two do matter. I can think back about an agility class I took my dog Grace to, and the instructor had at one point said to me, your body is saying one thing and your words are saying another, and Grace is confused. And, mm-hmm. you know, it, like, dawned on me, oh, my gosh, you know, I think I'm in sync here, but she can see it. Both of the dog and the trainer could see that I was not in sync, and so then we get a different outcome than we expected. Like you're saying, getting that, what's the feeling, the action that you want evoked? Oh, my gosh, such great stuff, Brandy. I think I could talk about this for a long time with you. But there are probably some times when you're not feeling like, you know, you just don't, you don't have that mojo, not feeling it. What motivates you to keep going?
I talk about having a vision powerful enough to call us through the pain of transformation. And so for me, even when I don't feel like it, my vision kind of propels me and calls me forward. It's like somebody grabbing me by the shirt and pulling me through tough times. And my vision is to make a powerful difference in the lives of those that I impact. And so, again, going back to committed to create and adversity and all those things, I think the answer is perspective. As I get older and I don't feel like it, I start tapping into, do I need to take some time off? Am I feeling tired for the moment? What would happen? What do I need to do for myself? And, you know, there's a lot of talk now about work-life balance, where we thought back in the 70s, in fact, the tourism industry, as some of you may know, some of you listening, really rose up in the 70s. Why? You know, all of a sudden all these hotels and restaurant chains and everything started growing. Why was it? Well, there was a philosophy out there that said that with the onset of the personal computer, that we would have up to 20 hours more time in our given work week for leisure activities. And so the tourism industry decided that they were going to meet that space with hotels and restaurants and other things to do, movie theaters and all these things. And lo and behold, what happened with the onset of the computer? We lost, it feels like, an extra 20 hours. We're working more now than ever. It was supposed to help us be more efficient, and so many of us feel like we're less efficient or there's so much coming at us that we can't handle it. So for me, I think that I have to have a vision powerful enough to call me through the pain of change. And then I also have to tune in and say, okay, what's really going on for me and what can I do to fix it? And most of the time, it's a little fix. If I just, like this weekend, I decided not to work over the weekend at all, at all. I just didn't have it in me. You know, I didn't have it in me to check, you know, emails or look or deal with anything else because I had done so much last week that I just didn't want to work over the weekend. And so I chose not to. Okay, so, you know, that little things like that where I'm honoring myself and I'm listening and I'm paying attention and it gives me more energy now to press forward.
Absolutely, yeah, perfect. And in terms of moving forward and feeling good, because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, when you and I talk, I get excited because of your enthusiasm, but it's not like rah-rah fluffy. It's very deep, you know, passion for your work and excitement about it and in very real ways. But I'm wondering if you have just some song out there that just makes you super happy just when you hear it.
Okay, so cheesy, but I love Journey. I love the old Journey stuff. That's the kind of stuff that I put on in Maroon 5 when I'm working on a creative project. So I'll always put that music on in the background, and it really helps spark creativity. And maybe cliche-ish, my daughter can't stand it. My teenage daughter can't stand it. But I love the song Happy by Pharrell Williams. I think it's just the instrumental in the back and the tone of the song. I just love it, so. That's
really
one of my favorite songs. Yeah, that's a little embarrassing to admit, you know, because it is a little cliche-ish. But I do love the song, and my family can't stand it because I think it's cool. But anyway, so there you go.
Got to have those, right, that irritate others. How about a favorite book or TED Talk that you have seen?
So I work with a leadership program for a state association, and part of their homework is to read a series of books. This is like a college-level leadership course that we do sponsored by this association, and it's a revenue generator for them and, of course, for us. But we go through a six-month-long program, and through that they read multiple books and watch multiple TED Talks. I got to tell you, though, one of my favorite books that's really impacted me, I have my top five. One of my favorite is Leadership and Self-Deception by the Arbinger Institute. And they also wrote a couple of other books, but the second one in that series is The Anatomy of Peace. And it's fantastic. And some of the core is really figuring out, you know, where am I in a box and where am I boxing other people in with my judgment? And how do I break through that and get results with people? And then they also talk about, do you have a heart of peace or a heart of war? In other words, is your propensity towards offense and blaming others when things don't go well, or, you know, is your heart towards finding a genuine solution despite your own personal gain?
So it sounds like, you know, you have all these wonderful books that you haven't even shared. You need like a top list, suggested reading list on your website.
Right.
So, on a lighter note, what is the grossest food on the planet in your mind?
Well, it's interesting. I grew up overseas. My stepfather was a supervisor for offshore drilling rigs when I was a kid. And so we traveled in all these different developing countries. And so I've eaten a lot of really, really interesting food that I won't share here for a lot of reasons. And yet, it's the simplest thing, and I'm so sorry, and I just can't get my mind around it. I don't know if it's necessarily gross, but I just can't handle cilantro.
That's so funny. My husband does not like cilantro either, but that is really funny given all the other, you know, possibilities that you know of.
Yeah, all the other possibilities, all the places I've lived, all of the weird, bizarre, disgusting things I've eaten living overseas. And I'm just telling you, I can't seem to get my mind around cilantro. I've tried really hard, and there's just something about it. I just can't. I've really tried, you know. Anyway, cilantro is it for me, so thanks
hey,
for asking.
Hey, we all have something, right?
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Well, if someone were going to want to contact you without any cilantro.
Well, yes. I can go to powerhouselearning.com, and that's probably the best way to find me, or you can reach out through email, Brandy with an I-E, B-R-A-N-D-I-E, at powerhouselearning.com, and my phone number direct is 208-316-7656.
Great. That's great. I know they'll find a ton of information on all your extensive learning opportunities that you have. It has been, of course, very fun, but also enlightening. I learned quite a bit, not only about you, but about sort of philosophies and data points today that were fascinating. And I appreciate always having that opportunity to learn from you, and I look forward to future collaboration with you, Brandy.
Sounds great, Robin. Thanks so much.
Thank you.